Welcome back. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast for the week of, July 24, 2013. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I'm sure you're wondering, why did we have such a weird intro, such an R&B-influenced intro? The reason is because the person that's on the podcast with me tonight, one of the two, is Kira Wisniewski, who saw R. Kelly, the champion of extended R&B soloing, not 1 week ago. Kira, how was R. Kelly?
Magical. Completely delightful. Everything you wanted it to be and more.
Did he urinate on anyone on stage?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I saw, no.
Did he mention that he had plans to do that later on in the evening or previously?
He didn't, but he did say some other really great things on stage. Like, for instance, he at one point was like, I've been going for 2 hours, which really it was 90 minutes, but, you know, round up, I guess. He's like, 2 hours, 2 hours, and I haven't stopped. You know why? Because I'm in shape. And then he had, like, the crowd do a little call and response of him not stopping for 2 hours because he's in shape. And so that was – there's just some really great moments. He also did I'm not sure if you're familiar with the track Sex in the Kitchen. But
no, but I know Trapped in the Closet.
Well, the track Sex in the Kitchen, he did a cappella. And then also when he closed with I Believe I Can Fly – and when that song was playing, there were, I don't know, about a billion white dove balloons that were released into the sky. It was really great.
In contrast, I'm also here with Punk News Reviews editor Brian Yancey, who not 1 week ago saw Restorations. Brian, did Restorations release 1,000 white dove balloons in the house show that you were at?
Actually, yes. Oddly enough, they did. It's really strange. It's not something they typically do. They're a very, like, working-class band, but I guess they figured, you know, we're playing this house in Philly that we've played before, you know, four or five times, maybe more. We might as well try something different, and as such, they pulled an R. Kelly, and weirdly, it worked.
Well, do you feel that was uber punks because it's so not punks, or was it not punks and they don't care, so it's punks again?
I felt it was uber punks because they completely defied everybody's expectations of what they were going to do.
Mm. Well, speaking of somebody that defies everybody's expectations, of course, recording tonight's podcast is Sound Guy Nairman. Crap, my CDs just fell down. Also, it's Sound Guy Nairman, who you cannot smell, you cannot hear, you cannot see. But you can feel, and sometimes he feels back, just like the Holy Ghost. So, thanks to Sound Guy Nairman for recording tonight's podcast. And on tonight's podcast, we got a pretty jam-packed episode today. We're going to be talking about Kevin Seconds beating down on the kid. We're going to be talking about Pussy Riot, rioting again, and protesting gas stations and presidents, and basically being more punk than anyone else you can name. We're going to be talking about making music in jail. We're going to be talking about Elvis Costello and the Roots, a unexpected but perhaps inspired pairing. We're going to be talking about Someone Still Loves You, Boris Yeltsin. So we're going to be talking about Riot Fest again, just because it is such a stacked bill. We're going to be talking about AFI. Maybe we're going to be talking about Gaslight Anthem, and maybe we're going to be talking about this band called Soho in the Isle. And also on top of that is we got a whole bunch of emails last week, so we're going to reach into the Punk News mailbag and read a couple emails, as I'm sure you punkers listeners were listening last week. Last week I was saying, I don't know much about jazz. Somebody tell me about jazz. Well, we got an email from Greg, and here's what Greg said. He said, first, I'd like to say that I listen to the podcast every week. I prefer it when you're involved, referring to Sound Guy and Airman. I really appreciate your knowledge of music history and your silence. Thanks so much for that. And then here's what he said about jazz. He said, today you mentioned that you were trying to get into jazz, referring to me, and that you're looking for some recommendations of some less standard selections. My favorite jazz composer is Charles Mingus. His two most popular albums are Mingus Ah-Um and Black Saint and The Sinner Lady. I also really enjoy Ornette Coleman, who is Henry Rollins' favorite, who more or less pioneered the free jazz movement. His album, The Shape of Jazz to Come, which Nation of Ulysses and Refused reference, is absolutely worth checking out. And I gotta say, Greg, I checked out what you recommended, and I enjoyed it immensely. I'm still working on understanding jazz, but thanks to you, I'm making the first few steps in there. So if any listeners out there want to check out jazz along with me, while I'm taking my first few baby steps into that deep, deep pool of jazz, you should check out Charles Mingus and Ornette Coleman, because they are both pretty wild and interesting. Second email that we got was from a fellow named Desert Burst 92. I'm assuming that's not his real name, but maybe it is. You know, kids these days with all their wacky names like George. Last week, Adam White and I were talking about the new Against Me jam. I said I was cautiously optimistic. Adam White said he was excited. We both sort of agreed that perhaps the track that has the refrain, "Does God Bless Your Trans Heart," was maybe a little bit too on the nose. Well, here's what Desert Burst 92 said. "I saw Against Me live in 2012 at the Hollywood Palladium. They were on a tour opening for The Cult. It was a really interesting time to see them because Laura made her announcement only a few weeks or a month before that show, and they still had Andrew on bass and Jay on drums. The energy was fantastic. It was one of the top three shows that I've been to. At this show, they performed three or four new songs that are supposedly going to be on the new album, Transgender Dysphoria Blues. Not to discredit the new EP, but having the whole band play these songs took them to a whole nother level. True Trans Soul Rebel, that's on the new EP, is amazing, and the whole band playing it, and the same goes for Black Me Out. By the way, John, you mentioned that you were hoping to find a less direct song that will be on the next album. Black Me Out is definitely that. I hope I convince you, and if not, check out this link, and I'll post this link at the bottom of the comments section of the podcast. So you heard it first, folks. Desert Burst 92 says the new jams are going to be fierce, and I think the Laura Jane Grey solo tour starts this week or next week. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
I got to say, I was going to say, like, I'm getting payola here, but I'm bummed I'm going to miss it. I recommend that anybody with their weight or their studs or their spikes go check out this show, because I do think this is history in the making, and I think this album might be one of the more important albums of our time. We'll find out. What do you guys think?
I agree.
I'm going to the DC show.
When's that?
14th, I believe it is.
Are you going to report back to the Punk News audience?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, fantastic. All right, well, let's kick this off with a song. I know Yancey's got two jams and I've got one jam. Yancey, you want to fire us on off?
Sure. I've got my first song this week is from a band called Poverty Hollow. They're from Connecticut. They recently self-released their own self-titled EP, both digitally and on cassette, if you're into that sort of thing. You can find it on their Bandcamp as a name your price download, or you can buy the cassette for a few bucks. And it's pretty cool stuff. They definitely have the sound of a young band, but at the same time, they're pretty fierce, actually, when compared to a lot of bands who are trying to kind of do the weird, moody, you know, possibly drug-influenced, 90s alternative punk kind of thing. It's a lot heavier and it's a lot more rough around the edges than a lot of those other bands are doing. And for that, I think it's super cool. And I'm really excited to see what they come up with next. But for now, this is the opening track from their EP, also called Poverty Hollow, and it's called Concrete.
Yeah.
are back on the Punk News Podcast, and we're going to start off this week's podcast discussion talking about a rumble, talking about a fight, talking about people not getting along. As I'm sure the Punk News listeners know, 7 Seconds is a pretty important punk rock band. I think they're originally from Las Vegas, or at least the Nevada area, around that area. They're releasing their first new album in about 8 years on Rise Records. They just put out the first song, and somewhat surprisingly, the YouTube comments on the Rise Record YouTube posting said were pretty critical of the band, at least the first few. Some of the people said, Rise is falling fast. Another person said, hey, I can't wait for more stuff from Secrets. I don't like this. Someone else said, bad. Someone else said, shit. Someone else said, bad. One guy called Genghis Khan said, we don't hate it because there's no breakdowns. We hate it because the singer isn't good, which is surprising because I think Kevin Seconds is generally considered to be one of the better singers of hardcore, if you will. Anyway, Kevin Seconds saw that he got a bunch of diss and hate on his YouTube page, and he wrote a long diatribe that you can read at punknews.org, but I'm just going to read some of the greatest hits of his essay. He said, this is Kevin Seconds speaking. He said, we do not expect, nor do we trust, people who find brilliance in auto-tuning every last vocal part and love music so heavily tampered with and processed. It sounds like it's coming out of a computer's asshole. They claim to love hardcore and feel utter confusion and unfamiliarity and unbridled anger when they hear a band like us, especially when it broaches into territory they consider their own. Personally, I make no bones about the fact that I loathe the mentality of these scene kids who now have such a huge hand in shaping up what makes today's alternative rock music community. F these people. We sat around for the last 10 or so years waiting for them to come up with something revolutionary, dangerous, and interesting, and what did they come up with? Effing screamo, crabcore, and the latest take on pig squeal vocal technique. Not one thing hasn't been ripped off or done better by someone else before. So what do you guys think? Is Kevin Seconds, you know, yelling at kids on his lawn, or is he fighting back for the true and the proud and the genuine punk rock music?
I have a question first before we get into this. What is crabcore?
Crabcore is it's really just one band called Attack Attack, invented by these guys called Attack Attack. And it's really just like a silly dance move. People got kind of upset about it because it looks dumb, but so does every dance move. Attack Attack is like one of these like neo screamcore bands where they scream and then have like EDM breakdowns and stuff. But the dance move is where you hold your guitar like to your belly, but then you spread your legs out really wide so you look like a crab and you go back and forth. And that's the dance.
And so does any other band do crabcore?
I don't think anybody does it as extreme as them, but I think other bands have co-opted that dance to a lesser degree.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification.
So, to answer your question about whether or not Kevin Seconds is an old guy yelling at kids on his lawn or somebody with a point, I think it's a little bit of both. I think this diatribe, while he makes a lot of good points, it's way too long. The people that he's speaking to, or at least trying to reach, will not read it. And if they do read it, they will immediately dismiss it in all likelihood. But again, he does make a lot of good points. And I think he really strikes a nerve with something that I think a lot of people in bands don't really talk about. And that's fan entitlement and how entitled some fans can be when it comes to bands or labels that they follow. And, you know, he's basically saying that, you know, what we're doing, you know, we've been around forever. You know, this is, you know, that's the most important thing to me, is that I can't think of anybody else in a punk band like this who has said something like this on such a public forum and in such a verbose way. Especially in this era where, like, you know, the average Rise Records band, you know, they have a very diverse roster, but most people associate Rise Records with, you know, shitty metalcore. Let's be fair. And, you know, those bands, for the most part, are very superficially constructed, superficially everything. And, you know, it's very, like, I don't know. It doesn't feel real necessarily, but kids are kind of into that, and somehow it resonates with them anyway. And that's the part where I think Kevin sounds like an old guy who doesn't get it. You know, that's not saying I get it. I'm not saying there's anything to get, but, you know, there's certainly something there that, like it or not, kids are into and are consuming at a dangerous rate, to be sure. But it's an interesting piece, and I can't think of another person in a punk band like this who's kind of called out fans for being like entitled little shits like this before. I'm sure it's happened before, but I can't think of one.
I think that's all a fair assessment, but I want to maybe, I'm so not answering any of John Gentile's question, but as some of our commenters pointed out, YouTube comments are like the worst of the worst of the worst internet trolling comments ever. And so I think you can go to like any YouTube video of any like band or like, so for instance, so there's some bands on the org that don't get like, you know, don't really get too much shit talked about them. Let's say, you know, our golden child, Hot Water Music. I'm sure if we went to a Hot Water Music video on YouTube right now, or even probably on like the Rise Records channel, there would be all sorts of bullshit comments of being like, shit, this stuff is stupid, blah, 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 blah. So like YouTube comments are just like the worst thing. So Kevin and everyone, don't take to heart those things. And also, no, that's really my point.
No, it's a valid point. I think that's, yeah, it's interesting. You know, it's hard sometimes for people to not take the bait, so to speak.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, what do you think, John?
I'm looking for comments on the Hot Water Music Rise Records YouTube. Matt Furno says he likes Dance Gavin Dance better than this band. Mooncat says, I listen to screamo metalcore because I like it too. Two spelled wrong. It's my type of music. Does that mean I'm seen? Nope. Do I skate? Nope. It's the music I like, and I don't give two fucks. This band is also good. Don't be judgmental. I'll read one more. Oh, here's what Nub Isod says. You're all idiots. So that's the comments that Hot Water Music gets on their YouTube. Last night I was at Peter Murphy of Bauhaus, and I was there with my radio DJ friend Mike Routier, who just ended his radio program, Radio Like You Want. And we were talking, and I made the argument. I said to him, am I being an old man that I don't understand the kids, or are we really at the end of punk rock and rock music as a whole? I know Neil Young said rock will never die, but I think he was wrong, because big band music died basically, jazz died basically, blues died basically. And the fact of the matter is, I think we are at the very last gasp of rock music. I think in 10 years, rock music will, I mean, there'll still be rock music, but it will not be a potent force commercially, maybe artistically, but not to the degree that it was 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. So I hate to sound like the ghost of Christmas future, Christmas yet to come, but I'm telling you, Scrooge McDuck, I see that headstone, and it says rock and roll 2017 right on it.
I don't agree. I disagree.
Well, tell me why. Tell me why.
I just feel like it might not exist in a certain form that we might recognize it as today, but I think that rock in some form was always going to exist, for sure. Absolutely, without a doubt. It's not dying. It's just, you know, evolving.
I don't think John is saying that. I think what he's saying is that it's not going to be as commercially or critically viable as it has been in the past.
What do you mean by that? Like, what do you mean by commercially viable?
What I mean is, and generally we avoid speaking in directness in punk rock and music criticism, but I'm going to say it, is there's still big band music, but is big band music breaking the ground that it broke in the 30s? No. Is blues breaking the ground that it broke in the 30s, 40s, and 50s? No. And maybe it's because the limits of that genre have been exhausted. And I think, maybe, I hope I'm wrong, Narboots has kind of proven me wrong, but everybody hates them. But I think we're nearing the edges of what rock can express. Now, there's always going to be interesting things, but not to the potency, not to the frequency, and not to the widespread influence that we saw with bands like Black Flag, the Melvins, Judas Priest, Led Zeppelin, Queen. I think, look at the top two tracks right now. That stupid, stupid Daft Punk song, and that stupid, stupid Alan Thicke song, Family Ties song. You know, I mean, that's what everyone says is the greatest thing ever. And those songs aren't that wretched, but they're kind of stupid. They're basically disco, but not good disco. And they're kind of stupid. And although I will say I'm getting off topic, I like Pharrell, man. I don't even like his music, but I like Pharrell's got style. I like Pharrell. The point is, though, rock music will cease to expand artistically the way it has in the previous decades because less people are playing it and because maybe we're running out of areas to explore in rock music.
I don't know, but I mean, maybe. I still disagree, though. So, for instance, when I was in Chicago this past weekend seeing R. Kelly, what had happened immediately before there, or maybe the night I got there, I don't know, I got really in late Friday night, so I think it happened on Friday.
Doesn't that prove it right there? The headliner is R. Kelly.
No. I'm not talking about Pitchfork. That's why I was in Chicago. But there was this huge Pearl Jam thing at Wrigley Field, and it was totally sold out. And I don't know what the capacity of Wrigley Field is, but I imagine it's pretty fucking huge. And the whole, you know, totally sold out for like a while, and people were real stoked about Pearl Jam.
Yeah, Pearl Jam's 25 years old, and they haven't done anything revolutionary in the past 20 years.
So are you saying that... I think it's still relevant, though, even if people are still, like, paying what I would assume for that concert would be, I'm totally talking my ass out of this, but I would assume that those weren't cheap concert tickets. And, like, if that's at Wrigley Field, then I feel like it's still relevant in that sense because people are still, by the thousands, going to see it.
According to the Sound Guy Nairman, our fact check, 41,000 people went to that show, and it was sold out at Wrigley Field. I mean, certainly Pearl Jam is a big band, but what does it say the biggest rock band is 25 years old? I mean, Van Halen, when they were brand new in 1977, was selling out Wrigley Field. So we need a band that's 25 years old to sell out Wrigley Field. There's what? There's Foo Fighters. There's Pearl Jam. There's Bruce Springsteen, I guess. And what other huge American rock bands do we have? Hip-hop-wise, I can rattle off 10 right away. You know, Jay-Z, Nas, Nicki Minaj, Kanye, Pharrell, Justin Timberlake. All these, like, these guys are way bigger than rock and roll, and even they're kind of Daft Punk. Daft Punk can sell out a friggin' stadium. Meanwhile, Jesse Michaels can't sell 200 tickets, you know?
Sure.
So anyways, hopefully Kier is correct, and hopefully rock is not dead. We'll have to wait and see, and hopefully, like Scrooge McDuck, I could not see the future during my certain Christmas Eve. Moving onwards, at Pussy Riot, just released a new music video called Like a Red Prison. I thought it was pretty cool. What did you guys think of the video?
I think the video is really neat. It's definitely like really well done and like fun to watch, and also like the imagery of it is very impactful. What I'm curious about regarding Pussy Riot, and this may have been covered on a podcast that I wasn't on or was on and don't remember being on, is that I'm wondering if so right now and like in the past year or so, like Pussy Riot has existed as like more of like they're more of like a symbol than they are a band. Would you say that's correct? Like it's
that's
yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, but that's also how it's always been.
Sure, sure.
Like Pussy Riot, it's always been more like a collective.
Sure, but what I'm wondering is their message, which obviously I think is a positive one, is their message and their symbol going to endure beyond the content or competence of their music? See, I don't think their music is that great, but you know, I'm 100% behind their message, their everything. But what I wonder is that, you know, eventually, you know, 2, 3, 5 years down the road, is the music going to kind of take over and will the message become diluted or the symbol become less important? And I'm just not sure. I mean, I hope it's not, but I really don't know.
I don't think it will be, but I'm often blindly optimistic about most things. But I think that I'm kind of in the same boat with you, Yancey, and then like in terms of like the music, it's not really my thing, but like I'm so supportive of everything that they're doing, and I think it's really really incredible and amazing. And I think that like the more women who get involved with it and like get, you know, are, because it's like the whole thing about Pussy Riot is that it's not just like this one was very focused on like oil in Russia. Yeah. But there's been, like, you know, various other subjects. So it's kind of, like, the collective of women can kind of, like, pick what their message wants to be, which could be, like, infinite, especially in, like, the oppressed country of Russia. Like, I don't know if y'all saw that BuzzFeed post yesterday about all the horrible things that happened during gay pride events in Russia, in Moscow. Anyway, but I think that, or I hope that, it, you know, they just continue to, you know, fight the good fight.
Absolutely.
I gotta say, man, the Pussy Riot Collective, that's punk, man. I mean, by doing what they're doing, they're risking going to jail just for, like, climbing on top of gas stations and stuff. And they know the government's out to get them because, well, just a couple of months ago, the government basically did a roundup and went around looking for them. And I don't get caught any of them, but what they're doing is punk rock. I actually enjoyed this tune. I it kind of reminded me of like a Russian version of Crass, to tell you the truth, kind of like Eve Libertine or Joy DeVere. Just the way they, like, it was so, I like the riff, and I like the ranting lyrics. It would break between actual like singing and ranting, which I thought was cool. And I loved how direct the lyrics is. I feel that in American punk right now, what's really popular is like ambiguous lyrics, like, I don't know what I want to do with my life, my friends and I watched the sun go down and we drank. Meanwhile, Pussy Riot is like, out from history, you homophobic monster. That's the lyrics in the song, which I think they're yelling at the president, which that's punk, man. I mean, instead of singing about how they and their friends are bonding together in their mid-20s, these girls are talking about how they want to erase their president from the history books and maybe even put him in the guillotine. I think that's pretty punk rock, man. I was digging this tune.
For sure. Yeah, I back that
100%. Word. Well, yep. Well, speaking about people that are going to jail, this is quite interesting. The ex-guitarist of Bury Your Dead, who was arrested as part of a mass extortion scheme, which involved beating a guy to the point where he almost died, as well as, choking a young woman until she passed out, armed robberies, armed house invasions, daily cocaine and opiate sales, and theft of thousands of dollars of merchandise from local stores. This guy was sentenced to jail for 20 years. He's just releasing, his name is Eric Ellis. He was in the metalcore outfit Bury Your Dead. He's releasing a new album, and here's what he had to say about his new album. This project began to take shape in my time off between Bury Your Dead tours, and not when I was thrown in the slammer. It went through many different forms and evolved over the years. You will have the choice collection from that expanse for those who can appreciate the precision and beauty of technical music. Yevichk is my legacy. That's the name of the album. Yevichk. And so a lot of people said, well, how can you record an album in jail? But a lot of people have done that before. Charles Manson, Varg Vikness of Burzum, and also very famously HR recorded the vocals from Sacred Love at the police station over the payphone with a quarter.
I mean, that's all well and good, but that doesn't explain like how they do it, other than the last one you mentioned. Like,
well, here's my best guess. Different prisons have different rules. In a lot of prison, you're actually allowed to bring a box full of stuff into your jail, so long as you don't have any contraband. At some prisons, like minimum security prisons, you can bring in books, a computer, a whole bunch of things. So what I would guess happened is he's allowed to bring his electric guitar into the actual jail cell, and he recorded it right onto his laptop. I mean, a lot of prisons, they have internet connection and stuff. And interesting, I read about this about 5 years ago. A lot of the cell keepers, this ain't Dungeons and Dragons. Well, the guards, they prefer when these guys have a lot of stuff because it actually keeps hostility and riots down in the jail. But you know, the other side is people saying, "Well, you're in prison; you shouldn't be having a good time making an album." So that's, I guess, the other argument.
Which is a kind of a fair argument, no?
I think it is a fair argument. My own opinion is this: is I think in jail, they can't make you work, which because it's a constitutional thing, which I'm not sure. Like, so a lot of guys just hang out and do nothing. I think a way to increase non-reoffending, and I'm not sure about this, and there's way more people that are smarter and way more research on this than I am, but is you have to give prisoners something meaningful to work towards. That is, you know, have them build something that people use somewhere, or have them create art or study. So if this kind of thing has a low recidivism rate, then I'm all for it. But if it's just so the guy can, you know, enjoy his time in a slammer, then I'm not for it.
Do you think that this is self-released or if this is a...
Let's take a quick look. I will tell you in 5 seconds.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it is out. Attached to it.
But what?
I didn't see a label attached to it, but maybe John has some info that I don't.
Yeah, right now it looks like it's self-released.
Interesting.
Sorry, John. I was just going to ask, like, who's the audience for this, by the way? I mean, is it Bury Your Dead fans?
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. Okay. I would think so. I think that's exactly it.
Here's a question. What is the ethical side of labels and artists themselves making money off their criminal notoriety? A lot of people put out Charles Manson albums and made money off that. And you know, the reason Charles Manson is in jail because he didn't kill anybody, but he convinced people to kill some people, which is in a pretty gruesome fashion. Ditto for Varg Vikness is certainly one of the reasons he's so well known is because people think he burnt down a bunch of churches and he shot guns at the guy from Mayhem. No, he stabbed him, rather. So does a label have a certain ethical responsibility not to make money off horrible acts, or is that line impossible to draw? I mean, can you make money off James Brown because he beat women? Can you make money off John Lennon because he slapped Yoko Ono around? Can you make money off George Clinton because he did a lot of drugs? Where's the line? Is there a line?
Isn't there some sort of rule that you can't like make money off of your crime or something like that?
Most states have a statute saying you can't profit off the topic of the crime that you committed. So like, let's say you kill somebody, you can't write a book and make money off that book. But if you kill somebody, if you convince somebody to kill somebody, and then you, I don't know, make an album that doesn't talk about it at all, hypothetically, you can make profits off that. Simply being a criminal doesn't mean you can't make money.
You just can't use it off of, you can't profit from the crime that you've made. Okay.
Right, that's, right.
Got it.
Yeah, but that's...
I can't think of a label that would put it out, honestly.
I'll tell you a label, and I'm not hating on him. Brent Einstone of Magic Bullet put out a bunch of Charles Manson records.
Yeah.
Is that a difficult question? Does a label have a responsibility not to put out albums by murderers or criminals, you know?
I mean, I guess it's up to the individual label, really, you know, because, like, there are some, like, small shop labels that are just, like, one or two people, and if they want to do it, then that's their deal, I guess. There shouldn't be any laws about anything.
It's all in the approach. I mean, if you approach it from a perspective of, like, you know, let's not necessarily brush aside what this person has done or what they're doing now or whatever. This is just a piece of art that exists on its own that we find interesting and we want to share with you. And it's like, okay, like that's fine, you know. And it's also not like a bunch of people are buying Charles Manson records, right? I can imagine that's a big seller.
Well, I mean, even $10,000 is $10,000, you know.
Sure.
My opinion is this: is I think you can draw a certain line. If somebody's famous for killing somebody or for raping somebody, you shouldn't put out their record. Should there be a law against it? No, but I wouldn't buy it and I wouldn't put it out. But I mean, you know, each person has to sleep. But on the other hand, I'm a huge fan of non-censorship, in that I think anybody should be able to express almost whatever they want to express. So if that's what Charles Manson wants to express, then he can express it. But I'm not going to help him express it. That's my point.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I co-sign that.
Well, excellent. And I'm just going to dot that off by saying, if I was a record label and Charles Manson said, you know, let's put out this record, and I made any – if I put it out at all, and you know people are buying those records because they think he's cool – I'd have trouble sleeping at night. But, you know, different people have different perspectives, and some people say everyone's entitled to their say, and they'll help them say that. Like the old phrase, I don't have to agree with what you're saying, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. So I guess that's the counter-argument. But on the other hand is, I'm just going to go off topic one more time. People are like, Charles Manson, he's so cool. He killed so many people. But when you think about it, like pretty much every president has killed more people than Charles Manson. So shouldn't these guys that love like murderers – Roy B. Lovin like most presidents of like most countries, not Charles Manson? I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know.
To step back from the politics and get back from a less heavy conversation, Elvis Costello and The Roots have just put out a new song. They've got a new album coming out. It is called Wise Up Ghost. Have you guys checked out the Elvis Costello and Roots combination called Walk Us Uptown?
Yes.
Yeah, I listened to it, and I think it's fine. I think the music is really cool, but I do think that Elvis sounds a little limp and a little out of place singing over this type of music. Maybe that's just my preconceived notion of what his music is generally like and that I should check that at the door. It seems a little slapdash to me, but I mean, I'll check out the whole record when it comes out, just because it's, you know, it's obviously like a bunch of very talented musicians collaborating on one thing. I'll always, you know, give that a shot, give everything a fair shot. But, I don't know about this song.
It was not my favorite thing I heard this week. What do you think, John?
I applaud Elvis Costello for trying to, I guess, not update his sound, but experience new things. I actually thought the jam was pretty fresh, but I thought the refrain could have been stronger. I feel like it's, as with so many modern collaborations as you hear in hip-hop and rock, where people can record in separate studios, it sounds undercooked. I think with a lot of work, with a little work and a little bit more tightening, just could have been a real slammer. As it is right now, it's just okay. I might stream it once on iTunes, but I'm probably not going to buy this. But, you know, much props to Elvis Costello and for, you know, keeping it up instead of quitting his music. And much props to The Roots for doing all these wacky projects, which they do. And speaking of wacky projects, I've got a fierce track for you guys tonight. I've got a track from Sal Mineo, which is Eugene Robinson of Oxbow, Whipping Boy in Blackface, and Juju, which is that weird, whacked out electronic bassy psychedelic group. It's just two people now, I guess. Anyway, they've got a new project called Sal Mineo, and it's kind of like Neurosis at the Edge of Time, if you will. This track is called The Perfect Bell, and it's off their brand new album called Sal Mineo. It's trippy, baby. Trippy. And welcome back to the second half of the Punk News Podcast. And we had kind of a heavy beginning, a heavy start. We were getting deep. You know, what's the moral ramifications of putting out a Sublime with Rome record? Is that cool? Is that not cool? So we're going to keep it nice and breezy, easy cover girl. The band Someone Still Loves You, Boris Yeltsin, put out a track called Harrison Ford. It's an all right jam, but the reason I bring them up is because they put out this little message when they visited Russia. In 2012, the U.S. State Department made the band official cultural ambassadors to Russia. And before long, their namesake's people sent them an invite. The Springfield Trio wound up spending 6 days in beautiful Yeltsin's native land in January, meeting with the man's friends with an assist from his personal translator, playing at a local elementary school, and receiving bottles of super premium vodka. So I think it's hilarious that a band that's not huge became a cultural ambassador to the United States. And so it begs the question, what other bands should be cultural ambassadors to what countries?
I think it was like an April Fool's joke or something, or something in that vein, where Andrew WK was going to represent the U.S. And I was real excited about that, like genuinely for a moment. I thought that was pretty fantastic. So I support that joke.
I agree. I think Andrew would be a great choice for pretty much any country. but you know, the government would send somebody lame, like, I don't know, like Will I Am or somebody instead.
You know, but honestly,
China. Oh, no, send Andrew to China. Send him.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, can we make Nickelback cultural ambassadors to Canada and then never let them back?
They are from Canada.
Yeah, right. We can make them cultural. Yeah, but like they're so ingrained in American culture, they're basically not Canadian anymore. So
oh, we'll reject them.
Ambassadors to Canada and then revoke their visas. Can we do that?
Who should we trade them for? Who do we want from Canada? Joey DOA, maybe? No, we should trade him for Adam White. We should swap Nickelback for Adam White. Let's do a trade.
Yeah, I should.
I agree.
So that results in, like, Adam, like, by himself playing, like, Nickelback songs on a huge stage, you know? It's like
That sounds terrible for Adam.
Adam White. He'll probably get, like, millions and millions of dollars. Like, Nickelback's, like, one of the highest-selling rock bands.
Yeah. If he was here right now, he would not laugh at that joke.
They would probably sell out a stadium, huh? Nickelback.
Yeah. Pretty much.
You know, we spoke about this on a podcast a little while ago. I saw Nickelback like their second year of existence at the Y100 Fest, where it was Nickelback opening, Lit, Sum 41, Blink 182, and Bush. And so we were saying, you know, like the cool thing is to say, oh, I saw Gaslight Anthem in the basement, or I saw Against Me when it was just two people. Well, I saw Nickelback when nobody cared about Nickelback. So take that. They actually did two Metallica covers, and it was terrible. They were bad then.
Metallica covers? Oh, come on.
They did Enter Sandman and something off Kill 'Em All, but I forget which song.
Oh, my goodness.
That's super lame.
You guys know that band Trivium?
Yeah.
So, once upon a time, I mentioned this on this podcast, I hustled merch for a record label on this metal hardcore tour called Sounds of the Underground, and Trivium was playing it, and every night they covered Metallica. Every single night.
Yeah. They're big Metallica fans. It's evident in their music.
Well, we should get Adam White to cover Metallica on his Nickelback tour.
Yeah.
What song should we have Adam White do? I think we should have him do one of the crappy ones, like the Stevie Nicks song or something.
I mean, should Adam White just do like a Canadian artist like medley? Like he could also do like Sum 41 and Avril Lavigne and Justin Bieber, Arcade Fire.
Well, fair enough. Well, speaking of Andrew WK, he just got added to Riot Fest because a whole bunch of people dropped out of Riot Fest, including Motorhead, Bad Brains, and Crab Corps Champions, Attack Attack. Or is this the other Attack Attack? There's two Attack Attacks. I don't know.
Attack Attack. The other Attack Attack from the UK is we broke up last year, I think.
So the Crab Corps Attack Attack dropped out of Riot Fest. So the Riot Riot Fest lineup is looking pretty sweet these days. Just add it was Joan Jett, who still rules. Joan Jett kicks ass. Suicidal Tendencies, Andrew WK, but also Guar is going to be there. Flag is going to be there. TSOL is going to be there. Who else is going to be there? Peter Hook doing New Order and maybe even Joy Division songs, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Stooges.
It's going to be a fun weekend that I'm not going to be at.
You know, I keep hemming and hawing about going, to be real. And so I noticed today, or it was pointed out to me today, that they've released 2-day and 1-day tickets. And so that 1-day Sunday ticket is real, real enticing, I think.
Yeah, it's a good deal because I would also agree that that's probably the best day of the festival in terms of lineup quality.
Yeah, it's like $55 for the Sunday. I'm considering it, y'all, especially because on Monday I gave up my flight or my seat on my flight because it was overbooked, and so then I got like a voucher. So I think that I could basically fly to Chicago for $30 now. So nice. I'm thinking about it, y'all, because everybody in the podcast world is concerned if I'm going to go to Riot Fest or not.
Well, I might go just for hair tips. I'm looking at Attack here, and there's six guys in the band, and they all have different hairstyles that are, like when you go to the hair cuttery, they have the magazine with the different hairstyles, and like none of them are actually possible, but they have them in the pictures. All these guys have that haircut, and I'm going to tell you guys a funny story. Is before my friend's wedding, I was the best man, which I was quite honored to be, and I killed it. I killed it on my best man speech. But the point is, I went to the haircuttery place, and the lady said, I say, no clippers, same style it is, not just a little bit shorter, just scissors. Well, it's like a guy's haircut usually takes like 12 minutes, but she's like taking the comb, and they usually do the comb, and they just like snip it, you know? But she's like snipping it like vertically, and she's making like a million snips, like snip, 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 and it's taking like 30 minutes. And I'm like, man, am I getting a really bad haircut or like a really good haircut? So after about like 35 minutes, she's like, well, how's it look? I looked at it, and it looked really weird. Like my hair was like mushroomed out sort of. I'm like, yeah, I think it's a little long. And she's like, well, you wanted a Justin Bieber style haircut. And I was like, no, I did not want a Justin Bieber style haircut.
Do you have pictures of this because I would really like to see it.
I don't have a picture of it because she like worked on it for like another 30 minutes. Like I'm like, no, let's get it shorter. It didn't look like Justin Bieber. It looked like I stuck my finger in an electrical socket. The point is, if you go to this Attack picture, there's a guy in the middle. His shirt has like gear or something. My hair looked like his, but less cool. I mean, their hair looks pretty cool. A lot of these guys have like the metalcore Justin Bieber look, you know, where like swoops down in the front. But yeah. So, anyways, these guys got some cool haircuts. Anyways, and I had a Justin Bieber very briefly. Moving onwards.
I don't believe it. There's no picture evidence, so it's probably not true.
It didn't look like Justin Bieber, but like, see, I'm like, how did she think I wanted a Justin Bieber haircut? And my only thought is maybe the way I said it, because I'm 29, so I can't be asking for a Justin Bieber haircut at 29. You know, I mean, that's creepy. So I think maybe the way I asked, I was too shy to ask for a Justin Bieber haircut. She thought I was giving her signals for Justin Bieber haircut. And it would be like the unspoken contract between us two that she would give me a Justin Bieber haircut, but none of us would acknowledge it. But that's not what I wanted at all. I wanted a normal dude's haircut. Although actually, Yancey, listen up, people. Brian Yancey's girlfriend is a punk rock hairstylist. Is that correct, Yancey?
That is correct.
I was going to say,
she does it in a similar style that you just said you got your hair cut.
She does your hair that way?
Yeah, yeah. But, like, it's, you know, I don't have Bieber hair.
Yeah, you don't get, like, your girlfriend cuts hair, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm gonna hire your girlfriend to, like, give me a real haircut because, like, I've got, like, normal hair, but I need a style. Can your girlfriend help me develop a hairstyle?
Yeah, dude, what took you so long?
And is... Is having punk rock hair? I mean, I don't want punk rock hair. I want a trendy haircut. You know, like not like the George Clooney, but something that like you would see in like GQ. You know, like me with a cup of coffee. You know, the tie like slightly loose around my neck. You know,
something that would look good.
But is that not punk rock? Is focusing on your hair extra punk rock or not punk rock? Kira, you just had some pretty dramatic hair alterations, did you not?
Melissa did my hair. Brian's girlfriend did my hair. Yeah.
Is that cool? And how'd she do?
She fantastic. I mean, we like hung out on the 4th of July pretty much all day, bleaching and dyeing my hair, and it's the best hair color I've ever had.
And is it punk rock?
I mean, I think so. I think, you know, because that's what I go for.
No. All right, Kira. Here's the two gambits. Here's the two choices, and you don't have to pick either, but you can pick one of the two. Is focusing on your hair extremely not punk because it's considered vain and focusing on the exterior instead of the interior, or is having whacked out hair super punk rock because it's expressing yourself to the point where you're modifying your own body to express who you truly are?
Oh, I just wanted to have lavender hair, so that's all.
I think it's the latter. I think, you know, style's always been a crucial part of what punk is about. I mean, it's, you know, we can't pretend that it's not, you know, whether it's like a leather jacket or studs or, you know, Liberty spikes or whatever it is, like the style portion of it, which, you know, is like a very superficial thing, but nonetheless, you know, it's part of the look. Not everybody subscribes to the look, and that's okay. Not everybody has to, but, you know, I don't think somebody is less punk for doing their hair than they are for not doing their hair.
You know, I'm glad you're bringing it up because even today, fashion is extremely a powerful driving influence in punk rock. People say it's not, but it is. I mean, obviously, crust punk is extremely fashion oriented, and I describe fashion as wearing fanciful clothes that don't actually serve a purpose. So wearing a leather jacket with spikes and boots, that's quite a fashion. But also in what the so-called orgcore punk, where everybody wears like jorts and like flannel or like a t-shirt and like glasses, that's a fashion too. That's a style, you know?
Yes. You just described Justin August to a T.
Well, there you go. It's not a bad style. Honestly, I'm all for style, man. I love style. I think looking cool, as Pauly D says, you can never be too fresh. But speaking of people that wear clothes, we're going to talk about a video where a guy doesn't wear any clothes at all. This band, Violent Soho, just released a video of a dude riding down the street naked on a bicycle, which a lot of people thought was cool. I thought it was really cool. But it is with precedent because did Queen's bicycle race video, which was inspired by France's nude bicycle race, did that music video not have dozens of people nude on bicycles? I believe it did.
That's a good point.
Anyway, what did you think of the video? I thought it was cool.
I think it's fun. I think it's good in that they're kind of an unknown band, at least outside of Australia. I'm assuming, I have no idea how huge, if they have a following in Australia. I assume they have some sort of following, but you know, it's generally a good rule of thumb that if you're an unknown band and you're trying to break into a new scene or whatever, to kind of do something a little weird or a little provocative, and that's what they did. And, you know, it got them posted on Punk News, so they're doing something right, right?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I noticed more and more, in the hip crowd especially, but in most crowds, there's way more nudity in music videos these days. Is that a cheap, easy trick to do to get people to focus on your video, or is it a lessening of mores that don't need to exist?
What's the video that just got taken off for nudity? I remember hearing something about this.
Blurred Lines, what we were talking about earlier. Alan Thicke's son, Alan Thicke of Growing Pain, Family Ties, who starred with Kerr Cameron, who is now a religious zealot. His son, Alan Thicke of The Dating Game, his son is now fairly famous. His name is Robin Thicke, and he's got a video called Blurred Lines. It's him, Pharrell, and T.I. And in the original video, it's those three guys with a bunch of girls dancing around naked. And the girls don't even really do anything that risque. They just dance naked, which, you know, I mean, you can see that in any art museum you want. So anyway, people are like, oh, they got naked girls. That's horrible. And so they put them back in with bikinis and stuff.
Ooh, we have some fact checks from Nariman. What do they say?
JT has a video on YouTube and it wasn't pulled down. JT, I assume, means Justin Timberlake.
So. Yes.
You know, the best part about Nariman, he's like Ghost Rider. You guys remember the show Ghost Rider?
Yeah.
for the kids out there, Ghost Rider was a wonderful show on Channel 12 PBS, where the kids would solve crimes by learning how to read, and a ghost that couldn't speak would help them read. So Nairman is our own personal ghost writer. That's ghost writer, not ghost rider.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair enough.
Yeah, the video is cool.
Now, Brian Yancey, will you be our own personal ghost rider and rev up your motorcycle to fire out a brand new jam?
I will. You mentioned earlier in the show that I had seen Restorations play at the Golden Tee House here in Philly last week, which was great. And the whole show was really fun. Every band on it was really awesome. They played with Signals Midwest and Run Forever and Maja Lee. But the first band that played was called Donovan Wolfington, and they're from New Orleans. And they honestly blew me away. They were amazing. They had so much energy. And the songs were kind of interesting in that they're very conventional, but at the same time, you also don't necessarily know like what they're going to do next, at least in a live setting. Like, it's very like dirty and unpredictable, but also like kind of weirdly accessible rock music. And it's really fierce. Like, the new record, which is called Stop Breathing, and it came out on Community Records earlier this year, which Community Records, if you don't know, you can download all their releases for free or for a donation at their website. Yeah, it's a really great record. They're still on tour, I think, for a few more days in the northeastern area. If you have a chance to see them, check them out. This is the second track from their album, and here it is.
listening to the Punk News. Oh, wait, I can't read this. Ghost Rider, can you help me read this? Thanks, Ghost Rider. I can read better now. Thanks for listening to the Punk News Podcast. As always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions of those expressing them exclusively and do not in any way express the opinions of punknews.org. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews and tell us how awesome Ghost Rider is or your favorite nude music video. Until then, oh, we want to give a shout-out, thanks to Sal Mineo. Yancey, what was the bands that you liked? Wolfington Von Castle?
Donovan Wolfington and Poverty Hollow.
I got to say, those jams are pretty good. I enjoyed all the jams on the week. Thanks to Brian, thanks to Kira, and thanks to Nightbridge and Fat Records for giving us this sweet intro and outro music. We will see you beautiful, wonderful, handsome, intelligent readers next week.